Welcome everyone to Sublimely Austin, the podcast where two sisters discuss all their thoughts and feelings in regards to each Jane Austen novel. This podcast will contain spoilers, so if you don't want to know the ending of each Jane Austen novel, you should refrain from listening to this podcast until you have finished them. With that in mind, grab your book and your bonnet and join us in Regency, England. Welcome back, everyone. This is the final wrap-up episode of Sublimely Austin. I'm Amy.
And I'm Holly.
And we're just going to spend this last mini episode just going over our reflections of the books and certain reviewing our rankings and all sorts of goodies like that.
Sounds good. I am actually, I've got all our scores actually written out. I went back and double-checked them, so I can check anything at any time for any book.
Nice. Well, I think maybe first we go into reviewing our, like, sort of rankings on the Austin-O-Meter. Do you have any personal reflections after this exercise of reading all the Jane Austen novels consecutively?
I guess the only thing I'll really say is, I mean, I always love reading through these books. Pretty sure this was my first time reading Northanger Abbey, which was nice. I mean, my favorite over many years tends to change a lot. You know, like Sense and Sensibility used to be my favorite, and you know, it kept changing. But I just have to say, and you can tell from my book because it's the one that's the most worn out, is Emma is just, it's my favorite one to read, I think. It's the most comedic of all of them, and I just really enjoy reading that one. So I just really like to sit down and read that one. I don't know, it like makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what will I say is, you know, I think it's the first time I've ever read them consecutively, and there were a few of them that I hadn't ever read before, like Emma and Persuasion. And I think what I just learned about myself is I'm just not a very typical Austin fan, because all the staples that people love so much, I more like the lesser known ones or the less comedic ones.
Yeah, I noticed that, like, I tried to remember each time you said it was one of your favorites, and, like, the ones that are your favorites were actually, so our rankings were actually very similar for each book, and your favorites tended to be the ones that ranked lower, and mine, I think, are the ones that tend to rank higher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's just the one sort of takeaway I got from the exercise of just reading them all together and comparing them so directly.
Yeah, I mean, I also, like, noted, you know, I noticed things that I hadn't noticed before, which was really nice, you know, just patterns and things, just because kind of thinking more broadly, not just for entertainment, but, like, some of the themes and different things in the different books. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah, and I think also, again, with Northanger Abbey, I probably mentioned this on the last episode, but, you know, a lot of people just dismiss Northanger Abbey as this, oh, cutesy sort of parody, but, you know, as someone who has actually legitimately read Anne Radcliffe's Mysteries of Udolpho, I was able to engage with it much more deeply and really truly understand the subtext that Austen was going for, because I actually read that pre-existing novel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I will say that just more broadly in terms of doing this as a podcast, it was challenging for me just to remember. So I remember as we were doing the different books, like I really needed to go through the plot, even though I had just read the book, just because, I don't know, there's just so much other stuff going on right now between me moving and all of this and unpacking, like packing and repacking and unpacking. So, yeah, like just as doing a podcast, it was kind of hard for me to, like, in, you know, be focused and remember the books even after I read them. So I felt like we kind of had to go through the plot a bit. So just kind of for me doing this as a, you know, this is my first podcast, so that was a bit of a learning experience as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah, I think for me, I had a little bit of that too, just because I was doing like three, I was basically doing three podcasts simultaneously for a few months, like even though this is, only seven episodes, but I was doing this one, Sublimely Austin, I was doing Sublimely Gothic, my Gothic literature podcast, and then I was also doing interviews for my Insta Poetic Justice podcast, which requires a lot more sort of labor because I don't have one primary co-host like you in the Gothic Lit podcast. Like I would interview different poets each time. So just doing all of that was like herding cats. Yep. But alrighty then. So you said you have all of our rankings. Would you like to go from our rankings from highest to lowest?
Okay, yes. So in terms of the overall ranking for each book, let's see. I put them in order here somewhere in my notes. So there's our individual ranking, like my ranking and your ranking, which are similar but slightly different. And then there's the average. Do you want me to just go over the average?
Well, like, do sort of the whole ranking for like each book, like how they added up, and then you can do like the average of each individual category.
Oh, okay. But I meant okay, so I'll just say what we each did. So Pride and Prejudice ranked highest, and I think that's not much of a surprise. So my total ranking for it was 44 and yours was 42.
Okay.
So like average 43. So yeah, I'm not too surprised. I think that one just kind of encapsulates everything you would think about in terms of a Jane Austen novel. Let's see. Okay, so here's where we swap a little bit. So my second and third rankings are swapped for you. They're your you know what I mean? So I ranked Emma at 33 points and then Persuasion at 32 points. You ranked Persuasion at 33 points and Emma at 29.
Oh, okay. But they were Emma and Persuasion. It's not like, and it was not like we went totally different. It was the same too.
No, basically the same two take second and third place. It's just it's swapped for
Okay.
I put Emma in second and Persuasion in third, and you put Persuasion in second and Emma in third.
Yeah, okay. Interesting, which just kind of in a way makes sense because I'm sure just, I try my hardest not to let, with these meters, like score them based on objectively, what's in the book, not so much my preference, but that does kind of mirror our preference of you really like Emma and I prefer Persuasion over Emma.
Yeah, I really like Persuasion too. I mean, I do kind of identify with the protagonist in Persuasion the most, actually. But yeah, I do really enjoy reading Emma. I thought it was interesting that this was your first read of Persuasion, is that right?
Yes, it was. And it was the one that I was the most unspoiled, so I honestly didn't know what was gonna happen.
Yeah, so it is interesting. I feel like it's not as popular, but it ranks, I mean, at least using the metrics we used, it ranks pretty high in terms
Yeah,
of
in terms of the tenets of what is Austin.
which is interesting. Okay, so that covers first, second, and third. Okay, so for the last three places, this is where something scored kind of similar. Actually, all the rest of the books have the same score, 20 of 27, except for I actually gave Northanger Abbey like one additional point at 28. So I would say fourth for me is Northanger Abbey, and then tied for fifth and sixth place is Sense and Sensibility and Mansfield Park. And then for you tied the last three all at 27 points.
So, Northanger Abbey, Sense and Sensibility, Mansfield Park.
Yes, which is interesting. I think it's interesting that Sense and Sensibility, which is, I think, probably the second most popular or one of the most
Yes, it
popular
is.
ones, scored so low.
Yeah, that's interesting because there's no, like, in terms of like the fans and general discourse, the top three are Pride and Prejudice, Sense and Sensibility, and Emma.
Yeah, but Sense and Sensibility didn't make it as high. So I was actually, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but I was trying to think on, like, why could that be? And, you know, we are using our own sort of arbitrary scaling here. So I was thinking, is there some other metric that maybe we didn't include, but that potentially would have caused it to rank higher? You know what I mean? I think one good one that I had that we didn't end up using was secret engagement.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like that's a very strong plot point in that book.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what you think.
I can't really think of any, like, specific categories we could have added, but I think within the categories we had, that was certainly open to a lot of, you know, interpretation, that you could interpret feminism in different ways or poetic justice in different ways. And so, yeah, that's naturally skews things depending on how you approach it.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just interesting that all together I tied the bottom three.
Which are your favorite three, right?
We'll get to that in the ranking, so.
Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah, interesting. Yeah, so I think what I wanted to do is, so those were the averages that we did, you know, when we were reading them. Now that we've read all of them, I wanted to us each go through the specific categories and just think of the Austenometer. And for each category, we each decide what do we think, which novel exemplifies that category most.
Yeah, I have the individual scores that each of us gave for each book, for each category. An additional thing I thought was interesting, I can certainly see here, like, where each book ranked highest in each category. So one interesting thing is, so we scored pretty similarly. We were usually within 1 to 2 points on a, you know, 1 to 10 scale. But there are a couple places, or a few places, where we were actually 3 or 4 points, like, difference. So I don't know. Again, that could just, again, be interpretation, though it might be interesting to, like, point those areas, you know, those particular scorings out as well, and maybe try to figure out why we scored so differently. But that was just one thing I noticed. But yeah, let's go through the
Yeah, so let's do, like, the, you know, the categories, like, you know, and just with our gut, like, right now, just say which novel do you think, and then look at specifically what that novel, what we ranked it in that category.
Okay,
so the first category, of course, is Charming Rake. And, you know, just off the bat, not thinking about, like, what I scored for each category of each novel, the one that comes to mind for Charming Rank is Sense and Sensibility as the top one.
I think, I mean, yeah, they're very close. Honestly, I think of Wickham first from Pride.
Yeah, it's a very, very close tie between Sense and Sensibility and Pride and Prejudice because of Willoughby and Wickham. But
also the names are just with the W's.
The names are the same. And again, I have my own personal prejudice because the asshole in my life was more of a Willoughby than a Wickham. But
yeah, it's hard to really judge. It's kind of dependent on what you value, who you think is worse. Like, Willoughby, like, seduced and then abandoned someone, but he actually kind of felt really bad about it in a way, but then didn't do anything about it. Whereas Wickham, like, he was kind of seducing Lydia to potentially abandon her, but he
was forced into doing the right thing.
Right, but I don't think he really felt bad about what he did either. So, you know, there it's very close.
Yeah, the only way I can try to maybe objectively, like, tip the scale is the fact that Willoughby abandoned a pregnant woman.
Yeah, yeah, that's
like
pretty
that
bad.
Makes it, I think, a little bit more worse than Wickham. And I think naturally it's our own implicit biases that we feel sorrier for Willoughby's victim. Was her name Miss Williams or whatever?
Mm-hmm,
and then, you know, Lydia, we kind of be like, oh, she's always been such a pain in the ass.
Yeah, but Wickham also, you know, it makes you think of, like, Wicked.
Yeah.
You know? So he's who I think of first.
Yeah, so for me it's Sense and Sensibility, and for you it's Pride and Prejudice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you want to see what the actual scores were?
Yeah.
So I listened back, and I thought I had ranked one of them lower, but I think both of us gave each one for Charming Rake, for Sense and Sensibility and Pride and Prejudice, a 10.
Okay, yep, makes sense, because those are the two, big two.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Alrighty then. Then category number two, Obligatory Clergyman. Again, just totally not remembering rankings or whatever. The first thing I come to is Mansfield Park.
Really?
And I just say that because Edmonds.
Edmonds. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Edmonds' role of wanting to be a clergyman is much more pivotal to his conflict with Mary Crawford in a way. So like, it's not like Sense and Sensibility with Edward, where it's just kind of like a throwaway to the point that the movies have to expand on it a whole lot to make him interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I hands down think of Mr. Collins.
Of course.
Pride and Prejudice. He's so, and you know what? I think a lot of that is to do with the movies, because in the book, I think I mentioned this before, in the book, I mean, he's definitely a very pompous and kind of ridiculous, austere person, but he's not as bumbling, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
At least when I read the book over and over, I start to like distinguish the book character from the movie character. But like the two, like some of the actors who've just played Mr. Collins, the different adaptations, there's just so prominent, such a prominently ridiculous character that it just really stands out. And yeah, Mr. Collins, hands down, is like for me, the definition of like the annoying clergyman character.
Yeah, like, I was trying to, like, even it out a little and be like, no, it's not who's, like, the pompous, like, comic relief clergyman. I was really trying to put up a basis, whether he's comic or whether he's not, where is the clergyman really, really prevalent?
Yeah.
Okay, but so what do we put for Clergyman in Mansfield Park and Pride and Prejudice?
Okay, this is actually interesting based on what you said. So for Pride and Prejudice, we both ranked a 10 for Obligatory Clergyman. For Mansfield Park, I'm trying to remember who. I put like one score first and one score second. I think you gave it a 6 and I gave it a 5, or the other way around.
Oh, okay. Interesting that.
Yeah,
that
so it was actually kind of lower. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I kind of flipped like that. Because again, I think we were still operating, we were still operating on the premise of, you know, the obligatory clergyman as, like, in a sense, they're two different types of characters, like the Edwards and then the Mr. Collins. And so I think I was judging, at the time we read Mansfield Park, by a more Mr. Collins interpretation of that.
Yeah, definitely. Because then Emma, we also ranked a bit higher because, you know, Mr. Elton. Yeah.
Alrighty then. Then category number three, Regrets and Bad Decisions. Of course, the first one I think of, Emma.
Really?
You didn't pick Emma?
Well, yeah, it's hard to do it like now that I've like lost my split reaction. When I hear regrets, I think of Persuasion. When I hear bad decisions, I think of Emma.
Oh, okay.
Kind of, you know what I mean? So, like, together, the first thing I thought of was Persuasion.
Oh, okay.
But then kind of Emma also.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I think for me, Regrets and Bad Decisions is, I don't know, it's kind of open to interpretation whether, you know, it was good or bad for her to reject, for Anne to reject, you know, the captain when she did, but it all worked out. But for Emma, I just think of it because it's just one after another, like, bad decisions.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, it works out eventually in Emma as well. Persuasion is, I feel like the whole book is kind of about regrets, in a sense. But yeah, Emma makes a lot of really bad choices and meddles with other people's affairs, which isn't great. All right, so you want to see the scores?
Yeah.
Okay, so for Emma, we both gave it a 9 for regrets and bad decisions.
Yep.
For persuasion, oh, this is interesting. I think I gave it an 8 and you gave it a 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think I ranked it lower because, again, I feel like persuasion's got a lot of regrets, but I don't think Anne per se makes a lot of bad decisions, you
Yeah,
know?
no, it's not like it's this one regret that kind of is focused on throughout the book because the captain has come back into her
Right.
life. Whereas Emma, it's the present day, like making, regretting everything she's done within the last 6 months because she's messed up everything.
But they're basically very close.
Alrighty then, category number 4, wealth as poetic justice slash money. So I think the ultimate one for this one to me when I think of it is, of course, Pride and Prejudice with a close runner-up of Persuasion.
Interesting. Yeah, I definitely think of Pride and Prejudice first, just 'cause, you know, it's not just Lizzie throwing, you know, it's not like just how well she's done in her family's in the eyes of her family. She kind of also goes against the other family's you know, wishes. Although I guess that's actually true for Sense and Sensibility as well. But yeah, Pride and Prejudice, I don't know what I would call a set, like a runner up.
Yeah, well, I just think because of, Captain, what's his name, Wentworth?
Yeah, Wentworth.
Yeah, just the way that Wentworth, does make a name for himself, and he has like 20,000 pounds. So like he really like hit it big. And so when she marries him, she's quite settled. I don't think there's beyond Pride and Prejudice. I don't think there's really a marriage that sort of is set up that well financially like that.
Yeah. The Pride and the outcome of Pride and Prejudice is just so like, you know, like giving a comeuppance to like, you know, like so many people were like looked down on Lizzie and like tried to and almost like saw that there was something here, right, with Mr. Darcy and tried to like put her in her place, like Mr. Collins did, you know, and Lady Catherine did.
Miss Bennet.
It's just so satisfying at the end, I think.
Yeah. So for Pride and Prejudice, what were the exact numbers?
All right, so Fortune as Poetic Justice. So I gave Pride and Prejudice a 10, and you gave it a 9. And then for Persuasion, actually, I gave Persuasion a 7, and you gave it an 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Alrighty then, category number 5, feminism. So, again, thinking about it just on the fly here, I actually surprisingly think of Emma.
Really? I'm like having a hard time. Like my mind keeps bouncing around.
Yeah, like I just think Emma because just it is a very, very narrow form of white feminism, certainly, but there is something to be said about that she has no desire to marry, and in a way, like we don't get too much, she doesn't get any pressure from like her circle about it really that much. So in a way, her decision is more or less accepted, and just the idea, all the stuff she does do bad things and they have impact. But I think that is to be said about something that she is a person with position, and the fact that she screws up so bad just shows how much sort of social capital that she wields as a single woman.
So, yeah, this is like I thought so I think the book I thought of first was like just now was Sense and Sensibility, although as I kind of think on it a bit, like I'm not even sure why, like why that one popped up in my mind first, because I think I would say Pride and Prejudice has more positive feminist themes to it. So I'm not sure why I've sort of thought of Sense and Sensibility. Maybe it's because, you know, the mother and the daughters have to go live on their own, and so they kind of have to navigate, you know, being
Doing
by
everything themselves with
yeah,
or at least with very limited servants.
doing everything themselves while kind of dealing with, you know, different families who either like or dislike them. Yeah,
This
I
is
don't know.
true. So yeah, so what did I rank for Emma in regards to feminism? I honestly forgot.
So for Emma, I gave it a 6 and you gave it a 7, I believe.
Okay.
And then Pride and Prejudice, this is actually one of the ones that we differed on a lot. This was actually the greatest difference in score out of any of them. So this,
Oh yeah.
I gave Pride and Prejudice a 10 and you gave it a 6.
Yeah, I think I remember that. I think it was, again, I was just kind of reading, yes, there is the very straightforward and forthright, Lizzie Bennet, who is a stronger female character. I think my scoring on that was judged on just the whole
The
like
treatment of the
scenario.
other daughters.
Yeah, the tr yeah, in com like
Yeah.
propping up Lizzie Bennet against the other daughters, and maybe Lizzie Bennet is a good example of like directly against like men, but in terms of how the women interacted with each other, it was just like, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of see that. Like making the other daughters, quote, appear silly, but then, like, what does that even mean? Like, that's someone's interpretation of, like, their behavior. You know what I mean? I mean, we can argue, like, that Lydia made some really bad choices, but, like, yeah, like, I get what you mean. In fact, I think after you mentioned some of those points, I maybe would have scored it lower.
Yeah. But alrighty, so that is the breakdown of the Austenometer.
There were a couple other places where we differed in points. Do you want me to point them out?
Sure, where did we substantially differ?
Okay, so the Pride and Prejudice one for the feminist scoring is like the highest difference we had. That was 4 points difference. So
Right.
a few other places. So for Fortune as Poetic Justice, we scored Mansfield Park very differently. I gave it a 4 and you gave it a 7.
Yes, I remember that. And I think I was basing off that as a wider interpretation of wealth as poetic justice, that it wasn't directly by marriage with Fanny, but the fact that she had, kept her good graces with and ingratiated herself with the family. And so that even though they're not, their direct income with Edmund will be smaller with him being a clergyman, but they have access to like the family resources.
Yeah, I think I would actually agree more with that now because I mean, I was thinking in relation to like the family she's also been living with, but if you think of her, actual parents,
Yeah.
like she's moved up a little bit because of her situation. So, okay, so that w was that one. Oh, and then another one. So there's two other ones. So for regrets and bad decisions, this is also for Pride and Prejudice. I scored it a 4 and you scored it a 7.
Interesting. I'm just trying to think of why I would have done that, and I can't really think of anything, but there is I don't know, I guess I would ask, why did you do you remember why you did it so low?
I think so. I think the way I sort of reasoned this, and honestly, it's such like you can interpret it differently that it could go either way. But I felt like so Lizzie reject like she rejects multiple marriage proposals right throughout this book, and I feel like even her rejection of Mr. Darcy's proposal, like his first proposal, not the most gallant proposal, it like she comes to like no, realize she loves Mr. Darcy later and all of that, but I didn't feel like she really felt like she regretted the decisions she had made, because like at the time with the information she had, she made like the best decision in that moment. I guess towards the end she is sort of apologizing to him for having rebuffed him so harshly, but at the same time I don't know. I just felt like she didn't necessarily have a lot of regrets. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
no, I kind of get it. So you're not really counting her proposal rejection as a bad decision, and thus your score was lower. No, I can get that. And then I guess I interpreted it. I would agree with you in the same way that I also think that for the information she had, it was not inappropriate for her to reject Darcy the first time, but that whole thing was built on the fact that she just made a lot of presumptions, and then he made also a lot of presumptions that just, you know, snowballed into that bad situation. And I kind of sort of interpreted those preliminary impressions again as bad decisions that they both regretted.
Yeah, that's true. All right, and then the last one, this one is probably the least important, really. But for Charming Rake, we actually scored Persuasion very differently. I gave it an 8, and you gave it a 5.
Yeah, with Mr. Elliot, because you said you were heavily influenced by one of the film adaptations of Mr. Elliot, because apparently the guy was really diabolical, and you were just like, ugh.
Well, I mean, not super diabolical, but just, I don't know, I think I do sort of go back and forth on Mr. Elliot for each read. Sometimes I think he's not that big of a deal, really. And then the next time I'm like, yeah, he's pretty devious. He just, I remember your reasoning, which I actually agree with, is that it's not like Sense and Sensibility or Pride and Prejudice where he's a legitimate, like, love interest for the main character. Like, Anne kind of knows that something's off, and she, you know, is okay with his company, but she's not, like, really interested in him, you know, as a partner. So it's kind of like, yeah, he might be have some, like, underhanded things, and she is a little bit surprised later when she finds out more on his backstory, which isn't great, but it's not as striking, I think you said, because he's not, you know, he's not like one of her love interests or anything.
Yeah, and really. I think now that I'm jogging my memory, I think, you know, I kind of fall into the way of thinking that for Mr. Elliot, you know, he is, you know, we don't like him because we don't like, you know, how, oh, he's only, you know, getting close to, you know, to Anne's father to, like, you know, forward his own position, yada, yada, yada. And from a modern standpoint, we, you know, people frown very much upon that. But I feel like in that time period, like, you know, it's like the Game of Thrones, like, sometimes being that way was necessary for survival, whether physical in super intense like Game of Thrones or just more social political like in the sort of Regency era.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not on par with some of the other charming rakes we have come across.
No. Alrighty then, so those were the biggest discrepancies?
Yep, just those ones.
Okay, interesting. So now we can move on to, so we're each going to rank our favorite to least favorite after going through this whole enterprise.
All right, sounds good.
Yeah, so do you want to start with yours? And you can give a few kind of, you don't have to go into a whole spiel about each and every book, but, you know, if there are certain comments you want to make, feel free to do so.
Sure. So yeah, I kind of already mentioned, I mean, I just really enjoy reading Emma. I mean, it's like, it's such a hoot just to see her messing things up and then, like, trying to do the right thing and then, like, completely, you know, like, botching it. I just find that one very amusing, and I like to read that one. Persuasion's my second favorite. Again, I just really like Persuasion. It's kind of different. It's funny that it does score high on the Austen stuff, but it just feels different because of, you know, the whole setup where you have a proposal that was rejected, you know, ages ago, and now it's kind of like you're recovering from that situation. And I also really like Anne Elliot as a character. Pride and Prejudice, I put third. So for Sense and Sensibility and Pride and Prejudice, I kind of go back and forth. Sometimes I like one more than the other. Depends on, like, the mood I'm in. I kind of like both similarly. I just put Pride and Prejudice third and Sense and Sensibility fourth this time around. Yeah, I think usually if I read Pride and Prejudice first, I'm ready for something a little more serious, if that makes sense. But this time, I think we read Sense and Sensibility first. So after that, I was ready for, like, more of something that, again, had more poetic justice at the end of it. So yeah, I like both those pretty similarly. Mansfield Park, was my fifth this time around. It's been...
So Pride and Prejudice was third and Sense and Sensibility was fourth?
Yeah.
Okay.
For me this time. Mansfield Park, you know, it's been my favorite in the past at various times, but I don't know, just as a book, like, to get through, there's just a lot of stuff I think we talked about, like, just the theater stuff, and then, like, the walking around Southerton. I mean, it's interesting, and I do like to read it, and then when Fanny sort of comes into her own as a character, it's very, you know, it's kind of a relief a bit. But yeah, I just, you know, this time around, I wasn't as into it. And then my least favorite, mainly because, I mean, I hadn't read it before and it's just very different in terms of like the gothic undertones and stuff that it just kind of, it seems very different from like a standard Austen sort of. So I put Northanger Abbey last just because it just felt like very different. It was also very short. I kind of wish it were like a more detailed, longer book. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyway, those were my rankings.
Okay, interesting. So again, like you, and I think with lots of Austen fans, you know, my favorites can vary depending on each rereadings. Mm-hmm. But for me, here's my order. So number one as my favorite is Northanger Abbey.
That's so funny.
Yeah, so again, it's just my personal preference of, I absolutely adore gothic literature. I have a whole gothic literature podcast. So it's just my very specific one. But also, I think it's funny that, you know, it does read very, very differently from the others. But there's no denying that it's a more comedic one. And it's just kind of funny because I tend to not go for the comedic ones. Yet this one comedic one, which she wrote first, was my favorite.
Yeah.
So, can't really explain it beyond that, just because I think, again, ultimately, Catherine Morland, I relate to so much in terms of being bamboozled by other people, and definitely felt that in my earlier years in my youth, so. So, yeah, number one was Northanger Abbey. Number two is Sense and Sensibility for me.
Nice.
And again, this comes from, you know, we got the whole sordid, detailed story of when we talked about that book, that I, you know, my own love story with my husband follows a very Sense and Sensibility framework, where I had a Willoughby and he was a pain in the butt. And then I realized, oh, here's this older gentleman who is a lot nicer and has always been here and I never noticed him before.
That's funny.
Yeah, so... for those personal reasons, really like Sense Sensibility. Number three, I'm surprised, Persuasion.
Persuasion, yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised how much I enjoyed Persuasion. I think it was a good, it's a nice, again, it's quite interesting that Northanger Abbey was written first and Persuasion was probably written last, yet they were both published at the same time.
Yeah.
So published at the same time, but definitely different spectrums of her writing life. But I really liked the idea that her protagonist was older and giving us a little, you know, slightly different take on, you know, a kind of, you know, quote unquote spinster, like at 27.
An old maid at 27.
Yeah, but again, beyond from her typical heroines between like, you know, 17 and 20, like having someone who was older was, I think, a nice mm-hmm. breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
And then number four for me is Mansfield Park.
Mansfield Park.
Yeah, and again, like in the past, Mansfield Park has been in my top three because, again, we went to the whole spiel about, I think, a lot of people dismiss Fanny unfairly in the same way they dismiss Cinderella, and it's victim blaming, and I don't like it.
Mm-hmm, but,
yeah, so of course I still like it, but definitely reading it, just the theater stuff does not age well for a modern audience, and especially for, you know, we grew up in Ashland, home of the Shakespeare Festival, so, like, theater is awesome. Like, so, like, mm-hmm. to paint, like, theater in, like, it serves the purpose of showing, like, the dynamics and tensions between the various characters, and so I know why it's there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it just is, like, bleh.
It is a little strange.
Yeah. Number five for me is Emma.
Emma.
Emma, because again, with the exception of Northanger Abbey, I'm not as diehard for the comedic elements. I prefer the more serious ones, but I did enjoy the character development and growth of Emma because, you know, at first it's like, oh my god, she's so mean and whatever, but then when you read her like monologues and, you know, trains of thought of how bad she feels and wants to make things right, it's like, oh okay, this is more realistic to, like, you know, real life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then of course number six is Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, blasphemy.
I know, exactly. I'm a very weird Austin fan. Again, I think it's the comedic element has it going against it because I prefer the more serious ones. And again, I think we already discussed the way they prop up Lizzie in comparison to her sisters. That kind of spoiled things for me. And again, just I'm not crazy about Mr. Darcy the way so many other women are. So
I'm not a Darcy fanatic myself, but I think he's okay.
Yeah, so for all of those reasons, and I think maybe it's just the wanting to think that it's so overrated when there are, like, five other books. Yeah. So, like, yeah, because I'm really into, like, trying to, like, I just recently bought, for 99 cents, I bought an ebook collection of all the novels of Bram Stoker. And the only thing he's known for, modern times, is Dracula. But he wrote, like, 8 or 9 other novels, I think.
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't even know that.
So I got the ebook and I'm going to read all of them because I'm interested in, like, what makes one book more popular than the others. Yeah, so I think it's just overall, like, the things I describe personally and then just the overall sense that, you know, Pride and Prejudice is severely overrated compared to, I think, the merits of some of her other works.
Yeah, I would agree, because they're all, I mean, I know I rank, you know, we each rank them just now, but I really do enjoy reading, like, all of them. Like, and
yeah, some, like, it's not like any of them suck.
It's very close for some of them, and, you know, it's all very close in terms of what I like, and it changes around.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then, and that concludes the mini podcast series that is Sublimely Austin.
Well, I definitely had fun. It was nice reading through these again in a bit of a different way. And doing a podcast for the first time was definitely interesting.
Yes. So if you want to hear more podcasts from me, again, I have my Sublimely Gothic podcast devoted to Gothic literature. I have my Insta Poetic Justice podcast devoted to modern poetry. And if you want to hear my sister and I, you know, talk again, she will be appearing from time to time as a guest speaker for my upcoming Harry Potter podcast, The Rambling Raven Puffs.
Yeah, just let me know when you need me.
Yes, I will. So, yeah. So, thank you so much, everyone, and take care.
All right. Take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye.